The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk Extra. Coming up on this special edition of the show, sorry for the speculation.
We are pleased that Express newspapers have today admitted the utter falsity of the numerous grotesque and grossly defamatory allegations that their titles published about us on a sustained basis over many months.
As Express newspapers pays £500,000 in libel damages, we'll analyse the journalistic and legal implications of this latest twist in the story of missing Madeleine McCann. Will editors Peter Hill and Dawn Neeson get their marching orders? Will the rest of the British tabloid press escape unscathed? And what now for cut-and-paste journalism? Or is the drive to sell newspapers still more important than the facts? We'll discuss all these issues and more on Media Talk Extra from The Guardian. It's arguably the biggest media story of 2008, and to mark the occasion, we've mobilised the Media Talk apparatus. Stephen Brooke is press correspondent for MediaGuardian.co.uk. Anything you'd like to apologise for, Stephen, before we start?
No, not today.
And also in the pod, here's Roy Greenslade. He's a former editor of the Daily Mirror, professor of journalism at City University, and our own press blogger on MediaGuardian.co.uk. You've been all over the TV today, Roy.
Yes, I think I must have done about 10 broadcasts. That's not quite a record.
But
it's going there.
Coming up for one. Later on, we'll be joined by Nuala Cosgrove. She's Director of Editorial Legal Services for The Guardian. She'll give us the legal view of this story. But first, McCann's hiding a big secret, Madeleine killed by sleeping tablet, and parents hid a corpse in their car. All these were headlines from the Daily Express or the Daily Star in the last 12 months, and none of them backed up by any evidence. Their front page stories today were rather more simple. Kate and Jerry, we're sorry. Both titles went on to apologise for articles which, quote, suggested that the couple caused the death of their missing daughter Madeleine and then covered it up, and went on to acknowledge there was, quote, no evidence whatsoever to support that theory. As part of the libel settlement, the Express newspaper group has paid £550,000 to the Find Madeleine campaign. We'll get reaction to this from our panel in a moment. First, though, here's the McCann spokesman Clarence Mitchell with a statement outside the High Court in London.
We are pleased that Express newspapers have today admitted the utter falsity of the numerous grotesque and grossly defamatory allegations that their titles published about us on a sustained basis over many months. The exceptional publication of these apologies, together with today's statement of full apology in open court before Mr. Justice Eady, was the only just and proper response by Express newspapers following our complaint.
Clarence Mitchell outside the High Court there. Roy, I want to come to you first. This is a pretty comprehensive climb down, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I keep using the word unprecedented. It's impossible, however, to use any other. And to go so quickly, to have a single solicitor's letter, admittedly with lots of examples of the poor behaviour, but to then call in your own counsel and to be told, as the Express must have been, look, this is not worth fighting, you've not got a leg to stand on, let's give in. And then to move so quickly into negotiation about the money, about the statement itself, that is also unprecedented, but it does show that at that moment, Express newspapers realised it just could not fight a case in court. It might have stood to have lost 5-10 times what it eventually paid the family.
Because, Stephen, the McCanns complained about every individual story, didn't they? And the libel would have been judged on each individual one.
And there was a massive catalogue, if you like, both in all four newspapers in this group, including the Sundays, of completely erroneous stories. I think the Star had allegations of the McCanns being swingers, which is probably the most outrageous example. But day after day, stories implicating them in the disappearance of their daughter that, when push came to shove, fell over like a pack of cards because there was nothing to substantiate them.
Now, on the podcast, we've joked a lot about the Daily Express and the Star's obsession with certain stories, whether it's the weather or asylum seekers or Diana. But the difference, Roy, with this one is that these were, you know, living people who were able to take action, and they could take action because they had the money to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really an example of how celebrity journalism has taken over all journalism, and that is that we're quite used to newspapers ill-treating pop stars and singers and models and just using them as cannon fodder in a sales war. But the same values, if you can call them values, were applied, I think, to the way they treated the McCanns. They were famous just by virtue of having publicised their child, and therefore they became another bit of cannon fodder as far as the Express and Star were concerned. We can say more or less anything about them. It happened abroad. They've been named as suspects. Therefore, the rules that would normally govern journalism about innocent till proved guilty, about the way you present stories when allegations are made, you make it clear they're only allegations, instead they dress them up as fact. All of that was forgotten about in the ill treatment of the McCanns, and not just the McCanns really, but everyone who surrounded them.
It was a frenzied rush, I think, to which all Fleet Street papers are guilty to lesser or greater degree, because they all went out there. The BBC 10 o'clock news presented itself twice, live from the resort where they disappeared from. There was a mass of reporters, and quite soon after the disappearance, no actual story to advance it further. So into this vacuum, and I think we can blame a lot of news editors here in London tearing their hair out and demanding stories, into this vacuum slipped a whole lot of non-facts. I mean, Maddie was spotted in Africa. There was a photograph that ran in the papers without any waiting for any checks that were going to show that obviously this wasn't Madeleine McCann. And I think the desire, the 24-hour news cycle and desire for endless news where there wasn't any, prompted to a large degree these speculative stories. But I would point out, and this is beholden to the Express Group, they've had so much cost-cutting that they've had to cut corners, and so many of these stories which first appeared in Portuguese newspapers they've lifted from the internet and run without doing background checks. I think we can point the finger at them, and at the root of it is their very poor budgetary situation.
Stephen's rightly mentioned the pack. We tend to think in this country that competitive journalism makes us special, makes us better than the rest of the world where there's less competition. But I think competition has a massive downside, especially when you get the pack. Everyone wants the same story, and yet at the same time they want a different angle. And what the Express did was just simply leap on any angle, any possible rumour, bit of gossip, an innuendo in order to compose a story. And I think that's the great difficulty with the 24-hour news cycle and the growth, the burgeoning growth of new media.
It's the feral beasts argument that Tony Blair postulated last year, and they well and truly charged after the poor old McCanns.
Roy, do you think that that other newspapers now might be wondering what their response might be if they get a letter from Carter Ruck on behalf of the McCanns?
Yes, I think that many editors will be saying there, but for the grace of God go I. They'll be somewhat more sympathetic to Peter Hill, the editor of the Express, than you might think. I'm looking at whether they even cover this story very properly tomorrow, because I think there might be even a conspiracy of silence or just too much embarrassment and shame for them to make too much of this. You know, in the famous way in which the Sun used to attack the Mirror and the Mirror over the Sun, I don't think that will happen this time. I don't think papers will go for the Express, because they'll be saying to themselves, we're only one solicitor's letter away ourselves from being sued.
Media Talk from Guardian.co.uk.
Let's have a look at the legal aspects of this story now with Nuala Cosgrove, who's the Director of Editorial Legal Services at The Guardian. Nuala, let's start with the basics first. What constitutes defamation?
There are many definitions, but the classic one is where you publish something in a permanent form which leads right-thinking members of society to shun or avoid you.
Right.
Or to think worse of you.
And this is the standard test that is applied in the civil courts.
Yeah.
Now, one of the interesting things in this case is that the Daily Express and the Express newspapers capitulated so quickly. What would cause a newspaper or a publication to give in without much of a fight?
Well, what we know here is that Carter Ruck were instructed about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So three, 4 weeks to settlement is very quick. It was a very long letter setting out a full history of the publication by Express newspapers, so in their four titles, and really making the case very simply, because the allegations were so extreme that it was clearly defamatory.
But I guess you could say that the Express wasn't making the allegations themselves, that they were reporting about on the police investigation.
Under the law of libel in England, you are responsible for reporting what other people say. So it's no defence to say I'm just reporting what a source told me. You take responsibility for what you actually publish.
And you mentioned that's under English law. It doesn't make any difference that this case was taking place in Portugal.
No, not at all. The material was published in this jurisdiction, so they're perfectly entitled to complain here.
And in the context of libel awards, the McCanns have got in the region of £500,000. Is that a lot? Or?
Yes, it is. But there's some very unique circumstances to this case. You asked me earlier about why did they fold so quickly. The reason they folded is because they're banged to rights. They have no defence. They could never prove the allegations that they were alleging. So they allege not only that the McCanns killed their daughter, but also one allegation was that the McCanns sold their daughter, and the other was that they were the reason for the silence of the Tapas Nine was they were all part of a swingers party and there was a conspiracy of silence there. So it wasn't just the one defamatory sting that you would think is quite serious, that they killed her daughter and got rid of her body, but it was also they sold her and these other stings. So the claimant lawyers would be able to amass and sort of pile up one on top of the other a compensatory award.
I see. So it's for each story, you know, that's why it's built up.
Yeah, it's not actually for each story. It's for each defamatory allegation. So there's probably 40 stories that had the same allegation. And so you'd put them all together.
Because there were so many separate allegations, that's why it's mounted up.
There's separate stings.
But yeah. one assumes that the Express newspapers have people like yourself who advise journalists and editors on what's defamatory and what's not. One wonders how it got so far.
I don't think their legal advice was any different to what we would give here, but it was clearly an editorial decision to continue with stories in this vein, probably in the belief that no action would be taken.
And are there any broader implications for media law in England, or is this, as you say, a unique case?
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, everyone's been calling it unprecedented, but it doesn't change the law at all. So it doesn't set a precedent at the slightest. All that has happened here is the Express have taken very good advice to fold as quickly as possible. Fold, give a front page apology, give them everything they ask for, give them over the odds compensation in order to close the case down as quickly as possible and to stop Carter Ruck's costs running. So they've paid substantial damages, but they will have closed down the legal costs very quickly.
Neil Cosgrove, thanks very much. Let's look at why the Express Group particularly went with this story. Is there any evidence, Roy, that it put on sales?
No. None whatsoever. I think you could say that there must have been a daily look at their circulation numbers, and early on in the story, maybe they put on a couple of thousand here and there. But if you look over the 9 to 10 months since Madeline disappeared, the circulations of the Daily Star, the Star on Sunday, the Daily Express and the Sunday Express have all gone down. They may have done it for sales reasons, but it clearly wasn't successful.
But, Stephen, we all know that when Madeleine McCann's stories go on the website, not just the BBC or Sky News website, our website's the same, that it regularly appears in most read stories. So even if it didn't have an effect on sales of the paper, it's clearly something that people want to read about.
Absolutely. I think this case continues to be a talking point. And it's funny, today it's all come flooding back again, and there's been rolling news coverage from the courts all day on 24-hour news channels. Undeniably, people still want to read McCann stories. And due to the Express's and the Star's sort of circulation decline, there are always other factors involved, such as marketing and other budgetary considerations. So it may well have halted their decline.
It was interesting. Roy, we had Nick Davis on the podcast a few weeks ago. There's been a wider debate, as Stephen Brook mentioned, the Tony Blair Feral Beasts of the Media speech. There is a wider debate about journalism going on at the moment in this country. How do you think this will feed into that?
Well, I mean, I think it's a contributory factor. I think we'll all suffer for it, by the way. I think that the credibility of journalism will be affected here. And if you lose the trust of the people, they will turn away from you. They won't believe what any of you write. I think there are two other aspects I ought to mention. Firstly, a very straightforward one about the Express newspapers. Stephen's rightly pointed to the lack of resources. But the fact that they are owned by a proprietor who has run the resources down, who seems to care little as long as their front pages are exciting and that they are plug away at certain supposed sales gimmicks.
Well, like whether it's the weather or Diana or whatever.
Weather, Diana, asylum seekers, you know, they just plug away at the same things. He clearly is not imposing any kind of ethical constraints, just the opposite, on his editors. And I see him as a rogue proprietor, a maverick proprietor, and I don't think, therefore, that one can say any longer that the Express and Star are in the mainstream. That's one side. The other aspect I have to mention is that I think we have to ask big questions about self-regulation. Why were the Press Complaints Commission not more proactive in this case? Now, I fully understand the McCanns did not make a complaint to them, but I think lots of journalists, lots of responsible journalists, raised questions about the Express and Star coverage very early on in this cycle. And we'd like to think that the Press Complaints Commission should have got involved and warned editors about what they were doing.
It seems even if they just rang up Peter Hill and said, Peter, a word in your ear.
But it does seem like the PCC was completely sidelined in this.
Well, there was contact between the McCanns and the PCC, but from what I understand, that was more about their desire for privacy at certain times and a desire for the PCC to intervene and make sure that the pack, if you like, backed off, particularly over the coverage of their other two children. But in terms of the PCC trying to rein in editors rather than their minions, I don't see that there's a lot of evidence of that.
Well, interestingly, Roy, there's been a ruling as we speak against the Evening Standard in London about reports about the Heathrow protests. The PCC would presumably say that it does have teeth. Look at us, we've ruled against the Evening Standard on accuracy here. What do you make of the future for self-regulation?
Oh, well, look, I think its future is secure. I mean, I think that self-regulation can't be bettered as in theory. It's all about practice.
It's in the practice.
It's
right.
In about practice. You know, I think they're not proactive enough, and I don't think they adjudicate enough. And I say this endlessly. But
because they have dozens and hundreds of complaints. Very few are actually adjudicated on.
Absolutely. Nick Davis reproduced the figures in his excellent book, and quite right too. And other people, media-wise, complain about this all the time. It's not the concept that's wrong. It's about how they carry out the task.
Media Talk with Matt Wells.
Roy, what does this say about the Express itself? This is a once great newspaper, once a bastion of popular journalism in Britain. It seems to have been reduced to a bit of a sorry mess under Richard Desmond, and this story is a symptom of it.
Yes, I mean, I think it's become a marginal publication and a bit of a laughing stock. Its ridiculous news agenda and so on. But, you know, it is. If you starve a paper of resources, this is the kind of thing that happens. If you do journalism on the cheap, and I don't even call it journalism, it's really just thrown together, very often, by the way, by journalists of enormous skill. I mean, I think it comes out every day. It looks reasonable. It looks like a paper. But when you actually read it, there's not much to it. And you won't be able to produce a proper newspaper unless you have a proper staff.
People still buy it, though. The sales figures, Stephen Brook, are
around 700,000.
Well, that's for both moderately impressive.
Well, better than The Guardian, I would hasten to add, at some detriment to my possible future career. But if you look at it, The Star and The Express, you know, they sell well, but of course far, far fewer copies than they did even, say, 5 years ago.
And it is true that what Roy says is that within the journalistic and media community, they're not seen as serious papers anymore.
Exactly. They don't talk to the Press Gazette. They don't talk to Media Guardian. They're not part of the British Press Awards. So there's more and more. They had this big fight with the Newspaper Publishers Association last year over the fees that they had to pay to it. So, yes, and I think this is going to hit them really hard.
But Matt, by the way, they are represented on the Press Complaints Commission.
Well, isn't Peter Hill, the editor of The Express, on the PCC committee?
Well, yeah, and do you think he should be there now?
Well, you're questioning whether he should be on the PCC committee. What about his position and that of his fellow editors?
Well, I've called today for the resignation of all four editors. I don't think it will happen. I think the idea that you'd replace four editors in one go is probably absurd. But listen, editors went, Andy Coulson, when there was law breaking under his paper. This is law breaking. Mm. This has broken the libel laws. And it's not just simply, see, I can forgive editors' mistakes. If this had been two or three stories and they'd gone out on the edge, okay. But they've been given a clear warning by Carter Ruck way back. Look, you're getting into dangerous areas here. Please desist. They refuse to desist more than 100 stories. That, for me, is a resignation matter.
Will readers demand more, do you think, Stephen Brook? I mean, we already know in the internet age, people are much more savvy. Do you think readers will be more demanding about journalism in the future after all of this?
This is a very difficult question to answer. I suspect not.
As 750,000 people still buy
can't be wrong. Mm. Are we saying it's going to be difficult to put ourselves in the shoes of an Express reader and read that front page apology. And then what is the logical conclusion that they're going to stop buying the paper? We've got to remember, but for so many people, newspapers are habit and they're part of their day and they fulfill a need that is very strong to the extent that even though they're greatly can be angered by what appears in the papers from time to time, they will still keep buying them. And I think that the only comparable thing I can think of recently was the Daily Mirror under Piers Morgan and its stories about the fake photos on the Iraqi troops that led to, I think, 20,000 or 30,000 readers deserting the Mirror on that issue. Whether we're going to see a similar fall off, I don't think so with the Express.
Interesting
somehow.
Philosophical position about how readers regard newspapers, right?
Well, if you think that newspapers are bought simply for the news, you'd be obviously wrong.
Yes.
I mean, that many people won't even look at the news. There'll be people that buy them for the sport, people that buy them for the crosswords, people buy them for the Rupert the Bear cartoon or whatever. So I think a nationwide boycott would be extremely unusual. I've called, in fact, for the people of Liverpool who are used to boycotting. They boycotted the Sun after Hillsborough to start a boycott here, mainly because, of course, Kate McCann comes from Liverpool. So there is a link. And I think if we could get a boycott going in Liverpool, get a fan out across the country. Boycott now, the Daily Express.
Well, with that clarion call, I think we'll wrap it up there. That's it for this special edition of Media Talk. My thanks to Stephen Brook, Roy Greenslade and Nuala Cosgrove. If you want to comment on any of the topics we've discussed, head to our blog, or you can head to Roy's blog, in fact, on mediaguardian.co.uk, or post a comment on the Facebook wall. We'll be back with a full programme after the Easter break. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.